thank you. So we're going to switch topical directions now and move away from history and philosophy and tell you about something that's very recent that my wife and I experienced just this year. So I'm Andy Bocarsley. This is Pat. We'll be talking about experience we had in our church, introducing a science and faith adult Sunday school course. I'm a professor of chemistry at Princeton University, and Pat is a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at Rutgers New Jersey Medical School. She's a viral immunologist. A very interesting thing happened to, I noticed this afternoon. Pat went to fill out that little survey that maybe some of you filled out, get a cup of coffee. The first question, I think, on there, one of the first questions is, like, what are you? Are you a chemist or a biologist or whatnot? And I've known her for a long, long time, and I know she would check biologist automatically. She tells me almost every day that she's a biologist. She looked at it, and she said, I'm not sure if I should check off biology or medical scientist. And the reason for that is Pat is not only a practicing biologist, immunologist, has just been offered the position at Rutgers New Jersey Medical School of Provost. Oh. So, now she's more than a biologist. Anyhow, with that's who we are.
Half time.
She's still going to be doing her, she still has her lab, and we'll have to deal with all that messiness you were just talking about. Okay, so anyhow, we have the virus sitting there attacking the cell, and we have a nice molecule over there, so that's who we are.
Does it have a shape?
Sure it does. Okay, a bit about our church. We go to a church. We've been involved with the church since 1980 in Princeton.
Andy, sorry, we've been asked to stay fairly close to this mic right here.
I can't walk around. I'm going to mess up my whole. Okay. That's Terry's fault. We go to Stonehill Church of Princeton, which is a non-denominational church, Bible believing. We've been going since 1980. It's
formerly Westerly Road Church, if anyone knew Princeton.
We changed our name a few years back and we moved to a new site. Same church, though. We are a church that is right in the heart of Princeton, and so it has a lot of students from Princeton University and other universities, Rider University, that are in our neighborhood. There are a number of scientists that are both professors, as well as we have a large chemical industry in our backyard, so we have that, as well as a large medical establishment in that area. So we're very science-oriented in terms of the people that come to the church. We're a medium-sized church, which means that somewhere between 500 and 600 people will show up on a typical Sunday morning service. But, as noted down here, we're more or less silent on this issue of science and faith. No one had ever thought to teach a Sunday school class on this. It's not a topic that is directly addressed, although our pastor, being aware of his congregation, clearly brings in various aspects of science when he's talking about theological issues. Okay. And so it's in that sort of environment that we asked our elder board if we might teach this class, and got a very positive response and suggestion. So this is the little PR thing that the church actually came up with, the little poster for advertising the class. You may have noticed in the title, I skipped over this, but it has the term leap of faith. Why is this a leap of faith? There was a lot of concern, in particular on our parts, but on other people's parts in the church, and that how would this be responded to? Were we going to cause a problem, and that were we going to introduce ideas that caused more of a fracture as opposed to an understanding, or was this actually something that was a good thing to do? And it was a big unknown going forward. Do people really want to talk about this, or do they want to run away from this? I'll share the punchline right here. This was the largest attended Sunday school class. It was a 7-week course in the church's history. We had at the highest number of people, 75 people there. And I don't think it was because we were super fantastic and better than all the other individuals teaching Sunday school classes. We have a number of theologians teaching and other people. But there was such an interest in this topic. It wasn't an interest to fight, but to learn. So that was a very positive outcome from all this. Okay, so why do we do this? So as I've already pointed out, it's a topic that it was assumed was too controversial to deal with in the church, and so we ignored it very successfully for 65 years or so. The people were there. If you look at the list of people that attend our congregation, they're very well-known names in science today, so that was not the issue. And in addition to that, we have a very strong connection, in particular, with Princeton University, so we have lots of undergraduates, graduate students, postdocs showing up weekly. And as I mentioned, also Rider University is in our neighborhood, and we have students from that institution and a few other schools that are a little further away. One of our big driving forces, that is Pat and mine, for doing this was a big concern that those younger people were running into issues in their college courses that, if not dealt with, could drive them away from their Christian point of view. That is, they might be forced to make a choice between, am I a scientist or a Christian? And we wanted to turn or into and, that there was not an incompatibility there, right? And it turns out, actually, that's not just a perceived issue. That is a real issue, that a lot of people either are told directly or indirectly, just because of the way we behave, that you have to make a choice and that you can't accept some of the concepts of modern science and hold to your Christian faith. So that was a concern we had. And then, to be honest, you all had a lot to do with all of this, and that 5 years ago, 5 years plus, Bob Kaneda sitting here invited me to give a talk here, and we've been coming back ever since because we enjoy the fellowship so much, and we're saying, wow, we can sit here, stand here, and talk to all of you about science and Christianity, and it's just a marvelous environment. It is a lot of fellowship going on. There's a lot of growth, and why can't we do this at home also? Why do we have to just do it here. And finally, this is the reason now why you should all run out of the room, is what this Sunday school course was, is a kickoff event, which we're planning to start this fall, for a small group, we'll see what size it is, that is a science group at Stonehill Church that looks at these issues of science and faith. And why should you run out of the room? You should run out of the room because we are planning on inviting in a number of speakers that are interested in exploring this issue. And guess where our pool is. So there's your warning. Okay. So I'm going to turn things over to Pat now.
And I have to say, this was a very scary thing for us. I teach 175 medical students. Immunology, no problem. I teach my graduate students. I get up at large international meetings and give a talk on my research, and I feel, I get a little bit nervous, but it wasn't like this. This was like, this is out of our realm, and what if we split the church? They will never forgive us. So it was scary, but it was something that God clearly laid on our hearts, and we were so encouraged again by what we experienced at ASA, and just the joy, even in worship, of lifting up our voices to God together with all of you is just an amazing experience. So the course theme was that, which is very common in this sort of thing, was that God reveals himself to us through two books, the Bible and creation. So, of course, the special revelation is that God gives us through the Holy Scriptures, and then, of course, general revelation of Christ through his creation and what we can learn from that. And we are both basic scientists. We have basic science labs. We train graduate students and teach. So, thematically, we knew that God is the author of both books. And this verse from two verses from Colossians, three verses, I guess. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. So that was our theme. And both special and general revelation disclose a creation that is good, vast, intricate, and worthy of study. So this is actually a quote from Dorothy Chappell, Dean of Natural and Social Sciences at Wheaton College. in When God and Science Meet, which became our sort of a course text, and I'll let you read the rest. But by faith, we enjoy exploring the natural world where we can see God's glory and respond through worship. And that's the joy we have as scientists, and we wanted to share some of that. So Princeton can reasonably be considered a historical home of the faith-science dialogue in the United States. And James McCosh was the 11th president of Princeton University, and he reported that while he was coming from Scotland on the boat, he was getting worried about what he was going to be saying. And he wrote the following in the Bedell Lectures in 1887, so this is a little bit after Darwin. I have all along had a sensitive apprehension that the undiscriminating denunciations of evolution from so many pulpits, periodicals, and seminaries might drive some of our thoughtful young men to infidelity, as they clearly saw development everywhere in nature and were at the same time told by their advisors that they could not believe in evolution and yet be Christians. So we think this is a very contemporary issue, and indeed it is. But even in 1887, the president of McCosh was writing this and having the very same thing that we fear for our young people. He was the president from 1868 to 1888 of what was then the College of New Jersey, and later changed the name to Princeton. Reverend McCosh founded the schools of science, philosophy, and art, and unlike most clergy of his time, he was a solid believer in Darwinian evolution, insisting that not only was it scientifically valid, but rather than calling into dispute the existence of God, served to increase the wonder and mystery of the process of creation. And I think that's something that most of us in this room would embrace today. There were some very famous debates between Reverend McCosh and Reverend Hodge. Not only is our town home to Princeton University, but it's also home to Princeton Theological Seminary, which is the oldest Presbyterian seminary in the United States. And so they had very spirited debates. And I heard someone call Reverend Hodge the most important theologian of the 19th century. So that was interesting. So, and just to say that this is again very current today, that a study in 2011 by the Barna Group queried why is the church hemorrhaging young people at such a rapid rate? And they did a survey, and no single reason dominated the breakup between church and young adults, but a set of six reasons emerged. So the most common answers were that Christians are too confident that they know all the answers. Second, young adults with a Christian background feel the churches are out of step with the scientific world we live in. Third is they embrace the perception that Christianity is anti-science. And fourth, they have been turned off by the creation versus evolution debate. And so these are the four that are the most common of those. The research shows that many science-minded young Christians are struggling to find ways of staying faithful to their beliefs and to their professional calling. So our course was well received. Participants ranged from scientists to science-interested individuals and students from high school to postdoctoral fellows. The jump-off text we used was a very simple one and could be downloaded for free, and we actually got a bunch of copies. Was the AAAS, National Association of Evangelicals publication, When God and Science Meet. So it's that little brochure or pamphlet that was available this week. And all of this we interlaced with scripture, and we continually brought glory to God to make sure that God is given all of the glory. So our curriculum covered a number of aspects, starting with the beauty and wonder of creation. We talked a little bit about the history of science and faith, beginning in the Middle Ages, and how Galileo and Copernicus were treated, and how that gradually the church came to accept their revolutionary ideas. We explained the scientific method, although many people in the group certainly would have understood it, but not everybody understood how scientists come to their conclusions. And we touched cosmology and the age of the and the universe. So we stopped there. No, not really. Then we decided at the end, we had to put in, we kind of pushed them off because they were the scariest topics, creation care, including global warming, because it had become unpopular to talk about global warming, at least in some circles, and you know that it was called fake news and whatever. And then we went into the history of Darwin and the response of his contemporaries. We actually had a very talented seminary student who had given a whole course on this, who came in as a guest lecturer. And at the very end, we did models of origins and tried hard not to take a particular stance. And to do this, I used Gerald Rau's book, Mapping the Origins Debate, where he really tries to give a very straightforward and unbiased view of the multiple possibilities. Now, I think anyone listening to us throughout the whole course would figure out pretty quickly that we were not young Earth creationists and that we were basic evolution people. So
by the way this course was taught was this tag team effort that you're seeing here. So we're using our same style as we developed there. And in part because of the way Pat handled that very last topic, where we laid out a series of models, and although we obviously had some feelings about what was more correct and what was less correct, and clearly any thinking person could realize that not all the models could be correct because they have different times associated with them and different organizations. By laying out all the models, going all the way actually to one model which just says, well, there is no God, right? There's just evolution of the universe on its own. It allowed the freedom for everybody, even though they held very different positions, to sit in the room without, and we can have a debate about it, I wouldn't call it a debate, a discussion, a very reasonable discussion about it, without anybody feeling like they were being put down or that their ideas were being cast out. And that's, I think, was very important to the success of the course, that we honored everybody's feelings on these various topics, so we had an open debate where people did not feel in fear. So what did we get out of this? First of all, this was a good thing to do because people were very, very interested in it. Not only did a lot of people come to it, as I pointed out earlier, but there was a lot of discussion associated with it in the course. People wanted to talk about this topic, and they wanted to hear different aspects of it. And one thing to point out, I did emphasize the number of scientists we had in the room, but this was a very large range of interest in people. So we had, age-wise, we had professors at Princeton University, we had high school students in the room, and then likewise in terms of their knowledge base of what is science and what not, the range is equally as big. So we tried to hit a happy medium there, and we did talk about a lot of different things. Probably the thing that jumped out the most to me is the second point here, is that I had students and postdocs coming up to me and saying thank you, because we've never seen a science professor, stand in front of a group of people and pray before. And it validates the whole thing. Just that you do that. How can you be, you know, how can you be a chemistry professor at Princeton and pray? It's quite possible, I said. So that little act was a big act, it turned out, in terms of how people who were struggling with this issue saw things. As I pointed out, very popular, and therefore we are encouraged to take this next step, which is start this science group and expand things out. We're going to hope to reach not only our own congregation, but more onto campus through some of the student ministries and partner with some of the other local churches as we do this. And then finally, our leap of faith. Is it a good thing to do? Are we going to split the church? No, you could have a discussion amongst people of goodwill on a very controversial topic, as long as it's framed correctly, it's very wholesome. And that was a big, important lesson for us.
Yeah. I mean, we did have in each of our classes, we did have, there was one couple in particular who pulled a young earth creation view, and they would bring up their points. They did it very politely. And then they requested that they could run their own little separate 3-week course on young earth creationism, and the elder board made it very clear that this was their opinion and not representing an opinion of the church.
But nonetheless, they were
granted that, yeah, but not as part of our course.
How many people came to that class?
That wasn't bad, actually. It was
20 to 30, I think.
No, it was interesting. And there, the debate was a little different. Actually, most of the people that came held a different position than the speakers in that. And so there was more of a polite debate still, but examining the critical issues in associated with the young earth creationist model. So to close this out, I'd just like to take you back to a statement of Augustine's: let every good and true Christian understand that wherever truth may be found, it belongs to the Master. That is, all truth is God's truth. And I think our experience with this class certainly pointed that out. Thank you for listening.
And we have if you're thinking about this, to find a simple text, find something that you can talk about. You don't have to be a super expert in all topics. I mean, certainly, I'm an immunologist. I'm not an evolutionary biologist, but there was I read enough and found enough material to present. So I encourage you to do it.
I'm going to take the prerogative of the chair and insert a comment rather than a question. I was interested to see James Bokash pop up there, the president of Princeton, who was responsible for putting science so heavily into the curriculum. He was hired by the Board of Trustees from Scotland because they really wanted a Christian person to be the president of the university and to bring science there and push it. And when during the time, he was, as you say, an evolutionist. But his view of evolution was a very typical 19th century Christian view. He wrote a book called Development. That's what he called it, Development: what it can do and what it cannot do. And what it cannot do, in his view, is produce absolutely new things like life, conscious life, and soul. So that might reflect a lot of that 19th century and even current ongoing conversation about the evolution issue and this whole design question. But he singled out those three points as development cannot do that, he thought.
And he was controversial.
Sure.
This is very encouraging because another professor and myself at Davis did almost the identical thing this last year, but it was not without pushback. We got about the same size group, but for example, one student that was there, her father, it turns out, is the chair of bioengineering at Davis, and he's not a believer, but he attended because he heard I was co-teaching this, and he basically said, well, I had to come and listen because I thought I had been told you were an educated person. I say this kind of humorously, but the truth of the matter is the students, just like that statement you had where he said, you can't believe this, the sciences, and remain a Christian. They were saying that in the 19th century. Now they've turned it around. You can't believe in, they're saying this from the classroom in the front. This Richard Dawkins kind of notion, it's a bias, a prejudice, really. And they just say, you can't possibly be a Christian and be a scientist, and they basically, the students come in thinking that all Christians have a God Hates Fags t-shirt in their closet, and that they are members of the Flat Earth Society, and all this other kind of, they don't believe in climate change and other things that are, solidly scientific.
But no, I think it's a very important point. They are hearing in their classes on campus, right, that you can't be both. You have to choose, right?
That's that question in the back.
And I'm just saying, someone needs to stand up and say, no, that's not true.
Okay.
You mentioned there may be a bunch of science people in the class as well. Did this help them sort of come out of the closet anywhere?
So actually, the short answer is yes.
Is this going to
way to make the church a safe place for people who believe in the evil.
So just one real quick story. We have a very well-known astrophysicist that attends our church, and we asked him before we did this, would you be willing to talk? If we put this group together, this science group together, would you be able to give a lecture? And he said, I don't think I should do that because people are going to know where I'm coming from in terms of, you know, the universe.
It's not 6,000 years old.
Right. And that's going to cause a problem. I don't want to fracture the church on this issue. And then after the class and he saw how it went, he said, yeah, I have to reconsider this. I think I might be willing to speak.
There's another question here.
How much time did you spend in a class talking about how to interpret like the creation stories in Genesis? Did you get into that much at all?
No,
a little bit.
A little bit, but not very much. I mean, it was part of one.
That could be a whole class in itself, right? And we were trying,
yeah,
and one of the things we were trying to do is say, look, the dialogue between science and Christianity is not just a dialogue about Genesis,
and
origins. There's a lot more going on there. A lot of it's found in Genesis also, but and so we didn't want to spend, you know, all of our time talking about this issue of creation versus evolution and kind of dig a hole. We didn't want to set that up as you know, the point of.
So I saw another question somewhere. Lynn?
Oh, I was just going to say thank you. I think about the number of lives you've already touched, especially among the students, and I just applaud your efforts. Really well.
I think we'll have to end on that note. Thanks a lot.